And welcome back to Manx Radio's General Election Candidate Interview Series. I'm our election producer, Amy Griffiths, and there's now less than 2 months to go until the island heads to the polls to decide who should have a seat in the House of Keys. Before then, we're inviting all the candidates in for a 30-minute interview to find out more about who they are and what they stand for. Today, it's Sarah Maltby's turn, who's standing in Douglas South. She's been speaking to Phil Gawn.
Falcharu gus rias cage and she is feed. Today I'm talking to Sarah Maltby, who's defending her seat in the constituency of Douglas South. So Sarah, I mean, you obviously have had 5 years. You must have enjoyed it because you want to have another go. Why do you want to be an MHK? What's your motivation for having another 5-year term?
Well, I think enjoy may be stretching it slightly. I have enjoyed the challenge on most occasions. On some occasions, it has been incredibly frustrating. However, as I'm proud to be from the Isle of Man, and actually I have two young children who I want them to be proud to be from the Isle of Man, and that has never changed. And so over the 5 years, I've tried consistently to try and keep that in mind and to work really hard to try and achieve that, not just for my family, but for the communities that I enjoy and for the people that I see around the Isle of Man who generally like living here. They just want to see some improvements in some areas. And if I can actively try and make those improvements, they might not be the biggest issues that everyone might think of, but actually it matters to those people. And really, it's about making the Isle of Man feel like a place that people feel like they belong to.
And obviously, you're not immune to, in fact, you're probably more aware of the criticism that this government has been having. You've been an active player in the government and indeed in Parliament in Tynwald. Do you understand people's frustration at the lack of progress over the last 5 years? And do you share some of the blame in that lack of progress?
Yeah, there have definitely been occasions where I felt like I was running around like a headless chicken trying to do so many different jobs within the government roles that I've been delegated. And that's probably one of the things that over the last 5 years I've learnt to try to think about for the next 5 years if I'm successful in this election, is what I should say no to, what I should say yes to, because actually I've said yes to everything that I've been offered because I wanted to get that experience. However, it has meant that there's been occasions where I've turned around and I thought a project was moving along at the pace that I was expecting of it, to find that it wasn't. And that's what happens if you stretch yourself too thin sometimes, is that you find that you're catching yourself and then you're having to go over that work again, which is really frustrating, especially when you kind of put your trust into what you're trying to achieve and it hasn't always played out. I'm not a minister. I haven't been a minister for this 5 years. And there's definitely a different dynamic. If you are a minister, you can change the direction of the department. It's better to have the buy-in of the departmental members, but you don't necessarily have to have that. You can, as a member of COMIN, make a policy decision and set the direction, and then those departmental members either go along with it or they resign their position. I took the opinion of go along with most things because I feel like I can challenge it more. I don't agree with it. So when I say go along with, I don't mean go along in support. I mean go along and challenge that as far as I can. And that has been really difficult. It would have been far easier just to resign and go to the back benches and go to ask questions and put motions in. But that's not my style.
Of course, you can only resign once from the government. Well, occasionally you get asked back, but it's very rare you're going to get asked back to any senior role if you are known to have a habit of resigning. I mean, you've identified that you've been very busy. Have you been effective?
I think I've been effective in some areas. Yeah, I do feel like the people of Douglas South have tasked me with go and do it, just get things done. And I feel like I have achieved that. I've remained really accountable to my constituents. I've delivered a newsletter every summer, which has explained the challenges that I'm having, the things that I'm succeeding in, and just being really honest with my constituents to say, like, I'm not getting very far with a particular project, and I'm going to have to change my tact or change my direction and try something else, because for this moment, I'm not getting anywhere with that, and I can't just sit and wait for something to develop. that's not what people expected of me. They wanted me to deliver. So I feel like I have made progress. It's not always shared on the media. It's not always shared by government. In fact, that's why I did my newsletter, because if the only person who can effectively speak for me is myself, and that's the only way I can get my message out is by doing those newsletters. And I feel my constituents have really appreciated the time that's gone into that, and also the honesty that I've given in, within those newsletters.
On our website, we ask you all what your priorities are, and you've chose social and economic growth, education and healthcare, housing and accessibility. Is there anything that's not a priority?
That's not a priority. Quite clearly not. The thing is, an MHK candidate can sit here and promise that they'll be all over everything. That's just not possible. You really do need to work within your skill set and be the voice for those people. I've worked in different organisations throughout my career before becoming an MHK, and they were all around social care, social injustices, within education. So I do feel that that's where my natural advocacy would go, and I've tried my hardest to make sure that those conversations I had before being elected and the things that I found really frustrating are the things that I've carried forward. So no, there's no priorities that are off the table, but there's just some that I'm a bit more knowledgeable about than others.
And I think you've learned an important and invaluable lesson about being an MHK, which is if you're not all over every single issue that you're fighting for, chances are it's not going to happen. Just looking then at your manifesto or draft manifesto, you talk about your values and building a better future is one of them. Decisions should be based on evidence, guided by a pragmatic common sense approach, while protecting the environment, heritage and cultural identity of the Isle of Man. Then in your at a glance section, energy and environment, you talk about developing a balanced renewable energy strategy. I suppose it's a direct question. Do you actually support wind farms?
If you look back at my history of how I've voted within Tynwald, I've always put the environmental impact as one of the things that's been really important to me. So when we talked about the North and West Area Plan, that was one of the considerations that I kind of stood up on to say that we are should be favouring our environment over the interests perhaps of developers. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't look at both sides. You've got to be completely pragmatic. You've got to look at both at all angles. However, we can't rebuild things once they're lost. And there's some elements that I'm really concerned about, in as much as once we get to a point of destroying an environment, it takes decades, if not
this is a long
centuries
answer
to rebuild.
And we're not getting towards a yes or a no yet, are we?
Are you talking about onshore or offshore?
Well, I'm talking about wind farms.
I would suggest that there's more that we need to know and understand. And I think what we're looking at the moment with the project on the offshore wind farm project was based on over 15 years contract. We've learned a lot since then, and I would like to be able to consider all of the facts in the round. And if I'm a part of the next government, that's exactly what I'll do.
Okay. Then housing. You've said what you said in 2021, deliver a national housing strategy and improve affordability. And then you've said what you've done, and you've said what you think needs to happen. Government supporters would say this has not been government's finest hour. Hardly any houses developed. Mm-hmm. No real significant change in 5 years in terms of affordability.
That's correct, Phil. And that's been one of the biggest headaches, really, I'd say. I was in Treasury when I was first elected, and we allocated a budget to the Housing and Communities Fund board, which was a completely new concept. Really excited about that. I thought that's going to be what's going to be the key to unlock some of these challenges, it definitely took way longer to get off the ground than it should have done. We kind of went into a second year and we had an idea of where this was going to go, and we were told about the OHAN, the Objective Housing Needs Assessment. That's all been done. And so it has been a constant waiting for answers. We've got the answers now. And I do feel there has been more progress latterly, but it certainly hasn't, as I said in my manifesto, it hasn't had the sense of urgency that the crisis demands of it. And that's not, I think, because people don't care about it or understand the issue, because we definitely do now. Douglas City Council have shown what they can do when they get given the funding to be able to do it.
Douglas has been thwarted by central government. Douglas tell us that they want to crack on and they want to build lots more social housing, and that they're being held back by government.
Yeah, so when I was in Treasury and I had those conversations to try and work out what the problem was, because they would say that that the DOI was making applications for the release of for them to be able to get their loan from their provider, and they were saying, well, why isn't Treasury Board considered this yet? Why is it taking so long? Well, it turned out that it hadn't come through the system yet to get to board level, and I think there was that lack of understanding about how the process was working. And from my point of view as well, I'm new into role and then brought into the Treasury Department was a huge learning curve, and I tried to find ways to try and smooth out that process. But yeah, they're absolutely right that it has been far too difficult to be able to get to the place where they are now. And once they have got to it, they've actually produced some really good results. I know that developers have an option to be able to pay into like a commuted sums. And I mentioned in my manifesto about that commuted sums needs to be reinvested. At the moment, that sits within Treasury. And I do feel like it's a missed opportunity, because that could be a way to release some of that funding back into the community to do something more positive with. And that's what people want to see. They want to see quicker results.
And they do. And you know, the charge, which is, I think, not unreasonable, levelled at government, is people want to see results. They want to see it done quickly, and it's just not happened this 5 years.
Yeah, that would be my assessment as well. I'm not going to say that's not how I feel too. The brownfield regeneration is something that really frustrates me. The message from government has been that even if we were to regenerate all of the brownfields on the Isle of Man for housing or for a different purpose, it still wouldn't be enough. I completely accept that argument, but it's a place to start.
And but if there were one, at least that would be better than what's currently happening.
It feels like even if we could make better use of those sites, not only does it get rid of something that's really quite unpleasant to look at, of course, there's all sorts of antisocial behaviour, for example, or it can attract more problems and make the site even harder to develop, then it's never going to right itself. So for me personally, I think that would be a place that I would really like to see government put more effort into. Now, I'm not saying that they don't know this. They know that there's brownfield regeneration that needs to happen. Absolutely, they know this. But I think there's a feeling, well, it's still not going to fix the entire problem. And I agree with that, but it would certainly be a place where I think if we were just to kind of seal that, sign that off and get that kind of dealt with, it might encourage more private investment from outside to other areas within the communities.
One of the other things you said in 2021 was that we should have improved infrastructure planning and maintenance. Your achievement, whilst I'm not belittling the achievement, at $700,000 for public rights of way is at least it's something. I mean, what about the roads, buildings, rail, heritage sites and all the other failing infrastructure, which clearly government doesn't seem to have a proper and adequate investment plan to maintain these?
I think the issue that we have, and you're right, that the investment into the capital fund, which is that £700,000, it doesn't include the uplift that was required for maintenance. But I can tell you that I've worked incredibly hard just to secure that. And that was a big achievement. But I also didn't go ahead and give myself a big pat on the back saying, that's it, job done. I've committed within my manifesto that I'm re-elected. I'm picking it straight back up again to try and get that maintenance fund.
But I suppose
to link
what your manifesto is silent on is all the other infrastructure ailing issues that don't seem to be being addressed.
I understand that, and like I said, I've not been in every single department. I'm not all over absolutely everything. I can make representations, and I absolutely do. I managed to get roads resurfaced within the constituency and across the island. In fact, you know, I don't just focus on just Douglas South. If people get onto me, I try my best to try and make those representations. But ultimately, those get put into a filing system within the department, and they work their way through that system. I've been very keen at going on taking photographs and reporting these issues and showing that they're not getting better. Of course not getting better, they're only getting worse. But it's very difficult for just for one person to do all that. It does take everybody to kind of contribute. But the point is that I've definitely tried to make the improvements that need to happen, but I'm not a minister. I don't have that direct oversight of the department. I sit within departments, and I've worked really hard to do so, and I've challenged lots of things within those departments, but ultimately I can only do what I can do, and that's a word of warning to any other candidate who might say that they're going to go in and make these big bold changes. It's just not realistic. You can work your socks off and still produce a result, as I have done with the public rights of way.
Do you think that Tynwald members actually talk together enough?
My approach has always been to try and work with people, and that's been shown in motions when I brought them to Tynwald, that I usually get a unanimous outcome. I don't feel like criticism and attack in other people, it's going to get you the results that you want to get. It certainly wouldn't have worked when I worked in my old place of work. In fact, it had the complete opposite effect. You really need to work with each other. You have completely different views, but you have to work together.
Is that happening? Because from various reports I hear, maybe it isn't.
It doesn't always happen, no. And I think that's definitely... That's democracy. At the end of the day, we elect people, and we elect 24 people who have got very different views, priorities and opinions and life experiences. And ultimately, we have to settle on a position where the Chief Minister selects their government, and that government then makes those decisions. Of course...
Well, let's move on to healthcare. I mean, you say you've opposed healthcare cuts. How are we going to afford the spiralling costs of healthcare?
I think we need to make a decision about, are the spiralling costs of healthcare, or that's just how much healthcare costs? It's very easy to say we need to make these big bold changes and completely destroy or rip up the system and start all over again. But if you're stood on the doorstep with a constituent who has a very serious concern or a very serious problem, and I was just to say to them, oh, well, I know you're in a lot of difficulty there, but actually, can I just talk to you about the Manx Care Board and how it's made up and the efficiency programme? They don't care about that. They want to know how they're going to be looked after, and that's how much it costs.
Same applies in infrastructure, which we've just been talking about, but government collectively, Tynwald collectively, has, it would appear, agreed that we are just going to have to get used to poorly maintained infrastructure, and largely because all the money that could be going into infrastructure maintenance is going into the healthcare, and every single spare penny seems to be going into healthcare.
I don't think that's entirely fair. I think that the Treasury has to make a decision about how the pie is cut, and they've made the decision how they've done it. What I don't like about this whole discussion is the premise that it's robbing Peter to pay Paul. Actually, that's not true. You know, we hear how much it's going to cost to deliver the service. This is just to keep business as usual, running as usual. And then when they say, well, you've not given us the appropriate budget for that, they get completely vilified because they haven't stuck to a budget that was not realistic to begin with. So I don't think it's very fair to say, well, because of that, that's the reason why the roads aren't getting done, because actually we know that how the pot is divvied up is far more complicated than
But if Jonathan Michaels came to the island and did a report into infrastructure, he would undoubtedly discover exactly the same issues that he discovered in healthcare, significant underinvestment. And you know, I think you could probably point to most of the departments of government and say that.
And I think, yeah, a fair point. But I think you would also, if you were to speak to my constituents, and they do get very upset about potholes, they do get very upset about the maintenance and the state of the roads. But I think they'd probably get more upset if they couldn't receive a service up the hospital more. And ultimately, that's what we're here for. We're trying to, an unenviable position, trying to make these decisions. But for me, the balance of providing healthcare services will always outweigh the state of the roads. But that doesn't take from the fact that I understand it's frustrating, but it's...
Moving on then to another of your quite eye-watering promises, a fairer system that protects homes and savings while guaranteeing dignity in later life. This is in relation to older people's care. Now, I think this is something that has been talked about for a long time, and you're basically nailing your colours in the mast to say that you're supporting this. But it's a big cost. Who's going to pay for it? I mean, that's one of the criticisms I would have of your manifesto. You talk about the things that you want to achieve, but you're not that big on telling us where the money's going to come from.
Yeah, so that is a big issue, and it's been a very live issue for a number of years, and we still haven't grasped that nettle, really. And it's going to take a conversation with the people to make them understand where, how much it's going to cost and what each model is going to cost, and then that ultimate conversation about how we're going to then pay for it. There are mechanisms for increasing our funding within the Isle of Man, our revenue. There are mechanisms to do that. However, it's going to take an approach where we're more bold about our mission and how we achieve that. One of the things that comes up time and time about time is people feeling that the system is completely unfair, that you find yourself in residential care and you have to sell the house because you can't afford to stay in that place that's looking after you. That is an issue that's gone on, and I'm not saying that shouldn't be touched. I'm saying that there needs to be a level where it becomes, you can't use any more of that money, that some of that money is allowed to be able to stay with the person and that they can choose to do what they want. It's not saying that it can't be touched at all. It's saying that there needs to be a fairer system to ensure that some of that money that has been built up within their home, their it can be either passed on or it can be used for other reasons, and that it doesn't all get taken away just to pay for the care of those people.
You have been, and you've already alluded to this, an active community MHK, certainly supporting people in Douglas South. One of the big issues, which I know has been affecting Douglas South, is the Pulrose Football Club changing rooms. What specifically have you done to assist and move that forward?
Yes, Pulrose Football Club is an absolutely fantastic community group. They welcome lots of different people across the community, but they also are a centre for the Special Olympics teams as well, who train there. So it really is completely unacceptable that they're still in a position where they have no clubhouse. This has gone on now for a little while, and I've attended lots of different meetings, and it doesn't feel like we're getting very far forward. And I do feel the frustrations of that group, as well as actually for the Football Association, who have committed a level of funding towards the project. I've made suggestions about the Manx Lottery Trust, who I'm a trustee for, and they've I wouldn't be able to vote on something that came through the trust because of my involvement with the campaign to try and get the facility back on online. However, I've tried to guide them and show them where they could find that information to be able to make that application. However, they're not at that point yet because there's more contractual arrangements that they need to discuss through with the Douglas City Council, which is something that I'm not involved in because that would be between the council and the club committee.
You've also mentioned a private member's bill on rights to enfranchisement, which you've moved, I think. Or you've had a right to leave to introduce. I mean, where's that up to now?
So I got the leave to introduce, created the draft legislation. which was another big learning curve. It was really interesting to kind of work out how you have to explain to a drafter your policy idea and how you want it to translate. So yeah, that was a really difficult piece of work, but something that I did enjoy doing. And got to the point where I was obviously consulting them with the DOI, who would be the people who would have to implement the policy, the legislation. And they said that we'd like to adopt it, to take it on and to further develop it. One person trying to write legislation to do a property law is quite a big task, especially when I was coming from it from a constituency point of view, trying to make something better for my constituency, whereas this is actually an island-wide consideration. And so they took that piece of legislation, draft legislation, from me, and it's sitting now within the DOI. And it was, I think it was going to form part of the House and the Miscellaneous legislation when that...
Which we were talking about 20
here.
Years ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
But as I'm not a minister, back to that point again, Phil, you know, I can only do what I can do when I'm not a minister.
Yeah, yeah. And what you've demonstrated is that you've done something there, but perhaps by allowing it to go into the DOI, it's allowing it to go into an area which we all know is under-resourced in terms of management and policy leads.
Yeah, I allowed it to go in there, but I didn't. They asked if they could have it, so I felt like it was something that they thought was worth taken on. Otherwise they wouldn't take on something that they thought was going to give them even more of a struggle. You know, I accept the point about the resource, but they asked if they could fold it into what they've already working on, and I agreed to that. Okay. So it wasn't as if they didn't want it and I forced it upon them and they haven't got the capacity to deal with it. That's not how I operate. There's no use doing that, because then it will just be kicked into the long grass. I'm not saying that that's not what's happened to a degree, but it was certainly not the approach that I gave to it.
And then a final question. In relation to Manx National Heritage, you say that a priority for the next term is to secure a fairer funding arrangement for Manx National Heritage. That's basically giving them more cash, isn't it?
The Manx National Heritage receives a grant, and also they also their loan facility, they pay interest on that, on any loan that they receive. So my plan would be to try and see if I could work with the Treasury to find a way to reduce the interest on that loan. That is something that I think should be negotiated. I know that other loans are negotiated that go through the government, so why can't this one be? And so it's not about giving more money, but it's just reducing the amount of interest that's paid on the loan that the Manx National Heritage has. That would free up money for them to be able to invest then within for the statutory services that they have to provide to the Isle of Man's Heritage.
Well, sadly, because I'm enjoying this, we've just got a couple of minutes left now. So tell us in a nutshell why people should vote for Sarah Maltby.
I'd like to think that I've worked really hard, that I've gained the trust of my constituents, that I've not just worked for Douglas South, but I have worked for the island. If anyone's ever got in touch with me, my first question has not been, what's your address, please? Are you on the voters register? It's always been, what's the problem? How can I help? And so that is, the words got out, and a lot of people do get in touch with me because they see that I take their concerns seriously. And so I hope that people have feel like I'm a compassionate person, a caring person, but I'm also a hard worker and I don't take any mess in. You know, I will really, really will try my very best to try and help people. And I'll be totally honest, if I can't help, if I'm hitting a brick wall and I feel like there's another way around something, I will say to that person, let's try and thrash this out together. It's always better to try and work with people than it is to try and be a lone wolf type thing in this situation. I think working with people is definitely one of my greatest skills. And so that's why.
That was Sarah Maltby, who's standing for election in Douglas South. Also standing in the constituency are Claire Christian and Livia Leonard-Dutsey. You can listen back to this interview, along with all the others recorded as part of this series, shortly after broadcast from your usual podcast provider. And don't forget, if you head to manxradio.com, you can find our dedicated election website, which has everything you need to know before you cast your vote on Thursday, the 24th of September.